This is an ABC podcast.
Aloha kākou, no ia e Māori and Goodfellow Morning. This is Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia. On the show today, Vanuatu CBD still on lockdown 2 months after the earthquake. It's a Super Bowl day and we can expect some big Pacific names showing up for game day. And shortly, we will get the latest on the controversy surrounding the recent Miss Pacific beauty pageant. More on those stories shortly, but Malo Abito, thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Aggie DeBoll, and I'd like to acknowledge that our show comes to you from the lands of the Boonwurrung and Wurundjeri peoples of the Kulin Nation. Again, this is Pacific Beat, yours in the Pacific. We begin with the region's biggest and largest beauty pageant that ended over the weekend, with Miss Samoa Litsara Iremia Allen winning the coveted Miss Pacific title. Her crowning on Saturday night brought to end a week of excitement in the Solomon's capital, Honiara, who were hosts for the first time in the competition's history. This is the outgoing Miss Pacific Islands, Moimoana Schwenke, speaking as her reign came to an end before passing on the baton to the new Miss Pacific.
In the Pacific, we are so blessed because we understand that the heavens, the land, the sea speaks to us. We know as Pacific people that the Pacific is not just the beauty that we see with our eyes, but it is what is felt in the heart, the soul, and the spirit. I feel a type of a nostalgia, especially coming here to the Solomon Islands. I feel a connection as if I am retracing where my ancestors once came and traversed the sea to. I feel that I am walking in their path, and that is so special to me, and I am so grateful for the opportunity to be in this position. Somehow I know that this crown was one of the places that my ancestors guided me to. And I urge you all here, one soul water, mana pasifika, no matter how restless the world may become, never lose the essence of who we are. Stay united. Stick together. We need more events like this, like Pacific Games, like Pacific Forums and Miss Pacific Islands pageant, for us to have the opportunity to learn from one another so that we can have the opportunity to build and reach our full potential.
Now, despite those positive words, the event ended in controversy over delays in announcing of awards. And over the past 24 hours, social media has been raging with allegations of a cover-up. So joining me this morning and on the line from Honiara is journalist and editor of Solomon Business Magazine, Robert Ironga. With that, I say, good fellow morning, Robert.
Good fellow morning.
Thank you very much for joining us this morning. Before we get into what actually eventuated out of the Miss Pacific pageant, how did you feel it went? What was the public turnout for Miss Pacific?
Yeah, I think generally the turnout was pretty good, especially for the key events, the one on Friday, which is a float parade. Thousands and thousands of people came out to show their support on the roadsides and even at the venue. So, and on Saturday night, there was a huge turnout. The gallery was packed to the limit. You know, this is a popular gallery that we held the Pacific Games. We hosted some events, the Intersports there, and it was packed. And people there were receptive, and they really adore what happened and embraced Miss Pacific Island pageant, which was held here.
And the atmosphere itself, though, Robert, what was that like? What did you see what did you experience?
Oh, well, electric, it's the word. It's live wire, as others would like to say. But yeah, everybody, the atmosphere was so entertaining and full of the feeling of being Pacific, being a family. It all came out together, and we really enjoyed it, especially the people who have not seen this. They even come to our shows the last we held here. I was in 2012. It was totally different from what we had in the last few days.
And especially from Saturday night, as we know, Miss Samoa was the winner of the night. What areas did you see where she scored quite strongly over the other contestants?
Yeah, it's very difficult for me to really tell the difference because everybody performed very, very well. I think it comes to the details and what the judges probably know better than us. And I think one of the things was she performed consistently in all the events of the night. And one of the how strange is she used the early missionaries in Ulo, the performances on the night, and appearing in white kind of attire most of the time, and with a very good background music. And I would say that probably she aged the others by a very small margin. The others from Tonga, even our own Solomons, they did very well in other Pacific Island countries, even from Kiribati and Nauru, they also did very well in Papua New Guinea. So I would say that it's the judges that probably the eyes and what they saw different from us. Yeah.
Yes, no, I know we aren't judges ourselves, but, you know, I know thousands were tuning in to watch this beauty pageant. But in the results itself, it seems like there was a bit of slowness, a bit of a delay between the scrutineers and the MCs over awarding different awards. Do you feel like this had affected the show in any way? And how did the crowd react?
Well, We, the media, actually were just right behind the judges, and we saw movements here and there, and before the results were announced, and even they were announced that there were still movements between as the scrutineers and double-checking. Yeah, so it was quite, it really disturbed the crowd and the spirit in which we were in, and there were some boos coming from all parts of the crowd because of the results were delayed, and they appear... the MC was basically doing a good role, but he was sort of delayed by a job of other people, the scrutineers who double-checked and went. And I think they gave him a piece of papers with the results, and probably he was trying to find which one was which one. So I think we saw what is happening on social media now. I'm not going to talk about that. I was approached by one of the judges to say that what's appearing on the social media.
Well, I think this is the issue that has come across social media. We believe over the weekend there's a video that went viral, again, allegedly showing one of the judges saying somebody else should have won. So again, have organisers of the pageant themselves said anything?
Actually, I think it must be the same judge was telling me to. I think... we have not heard yet, but based on what she was saying, was telling me, was that they're going to raise a formal complaint to the secretariat to have a look at the final results. Yeah.
Are you able to let us know who that judge was?
Well, probably I will try to talk to them before I can probably release the person's name.
All right. Well, then, Robert, you know, when we look at how social media has reacted to some of the problems during the pageant, what have you seen so far about how people have reacted to the situation that has come about because of the results of Miss Pacific?
Well, I think our people just want fairness. The Solomon Islands has hosted a very successful event, and we wanted it to end very successfully, and which is... some stain on it, but we had hosted big events like the Pacific Games, and it went well. And we just wanted some fairness to the winners. And also, us as a region, we should see these events as a uniting events, not as a division among our people.
Yeah, and I think that's the bigger question is, do you think the social media criticism and even the trolling has dampened maybe the positive benefits of Miss Pacific?
Absolutely. We benefited a lot. And of course, our people are able to see queens from our region. And it's a kind of an activity that unites our people. And all along, we've been uniting behind a queen. And also, we support other queens from our region. And that's a fact. So the ending was sort of a kind of dampened the spirit of our people here. But we are positive that it should be able, once it is solved, then it can be able to put back a good mark on what was held here on the ground.
Robert, have you been able to speak to any of the contestants themselves since the incident has happened, or even are they still there in Honiara?
Yes, I got us. Most will be flying out today. But, you know, the dampened spirit also dampened some of the spirit of some of the journalists. Yes, so all of them went early. But I managed to stay on for until almost 1 a.m. in the morning just to speak to a queen, and Queen Solomon. And see what was saying, was she, regardless of results, she was happy with the outcome, and she was very pleased to participate. And the result stands as it is, and we move on from here.
But now just for Solomon Islands itself, what has this done in terms of even tourism, in terms of just promoting your country? What has that done for you?
Well, all along, I think that based on what the queens, so I attended a lot of the ceremonies, they were saying that they were quite surprised to see how beautiful our country is. And we hope the spirit they bring from us is they help to promote tourism, which we are struggling to promote as a big industry. But in generally, the focus of the Pacific that to our region, to this country, and of course outside, there was a lot of people watching from outside, will be able to give us some kind of offer up hand, or people may be able to come and visit our country. Mm. And it's not all about Honiara, it's about all our countries, parts of our country, which are important and beautiful, as well as other parts of the Pacific.
Absolutely. Solomon Islands is very much a beautiful country. I was there at the Pacific Games, so definitely a place for many to visit. Robert, look, we understand that there is a lot of allegations that have been put out there, but until the truth comes out, then we will wait for that. But Robert, we appreciate your time in sharing what the latest that has been happening there in Honiara.
Thank you, Tomas. Thank you.
Tagio Tomas. Robert, that is Robert Ironga, is the founder and editor of Solomon Business Magazine here on Pacific Beat.
Come to Māori, Aro Bobby McCumber, host of Stories from the Pacific. And as a proud Ikiribus woman from Abeyang and Marrakei, it is my absolute pleasure to welcome our new listeners in Kiribus on 92.3 FM. Stay tuned to hear the latest Pacific news, sport, conversations and entertainment. From all of us here at ABC Radio Australia, come to Māori and welcome to our new listeners on 92.3 FM in Kiribus. ABC Radio Australia, yours in the Pacific.
Vinaka Vaka Levo and welcome back to Pacific Beat. Switching our attention to Vanuatu now. We're struggling. Businesses in the country's earthquake-battered capital are hoping a new national government will give them a better picture of what their future holds. Port Vila's CBD remains closed, nearly 2 months after the magnitude 7.3 earthquake devastated the city. A survey has found many businesses in the area are just staying afloat, but they can't keep it up for much longer, as Liam Fox reports.
Times have been tough for Ivan Oswalt, owner of Number One Cafe, since the December 17 earthquake.
Just before the earthquake, we were gearing up for a really exciting Christmas. It was going busy. We had a cruise ship the next day. We were fully stocked. We had food everywhere preparing for the cruise ship coming in. And so we lost lots of stock, fridges, everything broke. So, massive loss.
The cafe was a popular waterfront venue in the heart of Port Vila. His building wasn't badly damaged, but neighbouring ones were, so there's no safe access. And in any event, the CBD has been closed to the public since the quake. So Mr. Oswald's had to get creative to keep his business afloat and pay some of his staff.
So we've been able to set up a little pop-up coffee cart or coffee tent up at one of the main parks in town near the Parliament House. So we have a small staff contingent at the moment just to keep people busy and have some turnover so we can pay wages. About half the staff now are waiting at the moment, and the other half are doing one day on, one day off.
It's a common story, and one highlighted in a survey of CBD businesses for the Vanuatu Chamber of Commerce and Industry, carried out by economic consultant Peter Judge.
So we had 169 responses to the survey, and only 16% or 27 were fully operational, with a further 31% being partially operational. And the others were all closed, with some saying they were waiting until the CBD would reopen and others trying to find solutions in the short term.
He says businesses also reported a sharp fall in full-time jobs.
There were nearly 900 jobs lost in total. That's really significant for Vanuatu, where, you know, the total size of the formal private sector is probably only somewhere in around the region of 30,000 jobs. And many of those people who are wage earners will support not just their direct family, but also a broader family. So there's a lot of suffering across Port Vila right now.
40% of respondents said they're using business savings to stay afloat. 16% are using personal funds. Nearly half said they could only survive for another 2 months if the situation did not improve. The survey also asked what kind of help affected businesses would like. Mr. Judge says the most popular response was better communication.
the first thing that businesses really want to understand is the process for reopening, kind of what boxes have to be ticked, what safety measures have to be taken first, which buildings have to come down in the CBD, what does the phased reopening look like?
Cafe owner Ivan Oswald says he wants some clarity and certainty.
It's hard because we don't know what's going on. That's the main problem, is communication here. We still don't see a plan or a time frame of when we're going to open. So a lot of businesses are going blind. It's like, are we going to close for a month or 2 months completely and restart? Or can we operate for a while?
The problem with communication's been compounded by the fact there's only been a caretaker government in place all this time because Parliament was dissolved last November and a snap election held last month. A new government should be formed tomorrow when Parliament sits for the first time since the poll, and businesses are hoping the flow of information will improve. Back to the survey, and Peter Judge says there was one heartening finding amid the gloom.
We haven't found any businesses who've given up. Everyone who's temporarily closed says they want to come back. Given it was the most damaging earthquake economically in Vanuatu's history, I really think that's a remarkable finding and such an incredible testament to the strength and the resilience of the business owners here.
That's economic consultant Peter Judge, ending that report by Liam Fox.
Join Jacob McQuire and Michael Chow for Nisha Daily every weekday morning on ABC Radio Australia.
Oh my God, I'm eating polystyrene. You know, sometimes I'll be munching on my polystyrene cup.
Wow.
I've just been poisoning myself all my life.
When I think about you and sort of the way you are, Michael Chow, it's like the final piece of the puzzle.
Yeah. I'm not human anymore, Aggie. I'm mostly polystyrene.
Nisha Daily, weekday mornings from 7 o'clock PNG time on ABC Radio Australia.
Kia ora, Bwa. Thank you for joining us here on Pacific Beat. We switch our attention to sport now. The war of attrition between Cricket PNG and some of the players in their national men's and women's squads is not over yet. Chief Executive Richard Dunn says six Barramundis and five Lewas are still refusing to sign new contracts, and he concedes that some of those players may walk away from international cricket altogether. The CEO says there are faults on both sides, but his primary concern is to avoid lasting damage to the Cricket PNG brand. Richard Dunn says the board will withdraw their original contract offer now, but that doesn't mean the unsigned players are out of the picture.
When that happens, those players will go back onto a list to be considered by our selectors, and other nominations have come through from our associations as well, and we'll get our selectors to sit down and consider which players are going to be offered the unfilled contracts, but that may very well include a number of the players who haven't signed yet. In terms of you asking about the outstanding issues, I think the major one for the players is certainly around the T20 World Cup prize money. The rest of that money is with us at the moment, and we're waiting on a response from the IRC here about that payment being exempt from income tax, which has been done with a few other athletes in the past in PNG. So if the exemption's provided, then the balance of the money will be paid. If not, then we'll need to pay the IRC that portion of the tax that's owing. That's the only thing that's outstanding in terms of payments for the players, and probably the biggest issue and the most emotional one that we've got.
The fact, though, that we've reached this stage where at one point eight senior players, as I understood it, were indicating they were prepared to walk away from representing PNG. Now, based on the numbers you've given me, I'm surmising that that number is now down to six, but nevertheless, six senior players prepared to walk away. Is Cricket PNG prepared to risk that? It's not a good look for the organisation, surely.
Nothing's a good look at the moment in terms of airing all of this publicly, and we would have had a preferred method of airing these grievances behind closed doors and talk through the issues, but that hasn't happened. But back to that question, any loss of players, and particularly in one big hit, isn't ideal. But look, if the players won't sign and don't sign even a second round of offers of contracts, then I guess there's not much that Cricket PNG can do but to try to move forward and select the strongest team we can to represent the country with pride. Despite some contrary thoughts, there are other players in PNG who can play the game. We've got four under-19s who are looking like they're going to produce the goods and become future Barramundis. So we've got some others in the wings. Yeah, and quite often in these situations, you find that those who are thrown early into the mix actually give you more than what you expected. That would be something we hope happens. But of course, the first step is we'd like to resolve the issues that are still ongoing with those few players and move the whole organisation forward. We'll continue to learn and we want to grow. Cricket PNG is certainly not saying we've been without some fault in all this in terms of our cash flow and late payments, but they're all resolved. It just means we have to find a way forward with the players who wish to play for PNG. You know, one of the areas I think we've noted in the contracts that came up in discussion was the player welfare issue, and we've addressed that. We're putting to the board a notion around putting some more concrete clauses within the contract that talk about player welfare. We're going to discuss with the board a potential to put some actual funding in behind that player welfare and education program so that we'll formalise that more than we have in the past. No one is without fault in all of this. Are there better ways of doing it? Yes, there are, and there probably could have been, but it's always easier in hindsight.
Can I put one point to you which the players have raised? And I think you've already alluded to the fact that there's a lot been said in public by both sides that perhaps in hindsight you and they would wish hadn't been said, but it's out there. And one of the things they said, and I quote, in 12 months, the CEO alone has accrued more pay and entitlements than the entirety of the Barras and the Lewas combined. Any truth in that?
I'm not going to get into the details of that. That's confidential information. There's no comment on that at this point in time, Richard.
It does indicate, though, that those players who haven't signed a contract feel very strongly about this and give every impression that they're prepared to push as hard as they can.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to comment on specifics of anybody's individual contract. That's confidential between Cricket PNG and the employee or the player. But yeah, if they feel aggrieved, then they should be discussing that in detail with the board. It's not my job to do that. My job's to try to do the best I can for cricket in PNG, and I was recruited to do that, and that's what my intention is.
And what about relationships within the camp? Because I'm being told that maybe there is something of a rift between some of the players and the captain, for example. I mean, that's not going to be easy to repair, bearing in mind, of course, you don't have a permanent coach at the moment after Tatenda Taibu resigned.
Yeah, again, that's one of those things that we'll work through. We're looking to resolve the issues and we'll face anything we need to head on. And, you know, none of this is going to be straightforward, Richard, but our focus is on maintaining Cricket PNG's reputation in the community and their standing and making sure that it is not damaged to the point where those who wish to support cricket in PNG are put off doing so, because that will be the most damaging thing for anybody. The future of Cricket PNG relies on its relationships with sponsors, with the ICC and with others. And to date, we are doing okay in that. We have presented our 2025 budget and our Q4 reports to the ICC. They have accepted those and they have provided us with our quarter one 2025 funding. So that should describe the confidence that people have in us at this point in time.
And that's Richard Dunn, Chief Executive of Cricket PNG, on the line from Port Moresby. And he was talking to Richard Ewart. To Fiji, where its health ministry has declared a dengue outbreak with 200 cases recorded since the start of the year. Most of these cases are from the Western Division, affecting those between the ages of 10 to 29 years old. Now, the ministry is urging the public to take precautions to prevent infection and to seek early medical attention if they do develop symptoms. But the Pacific Mosquito Surveillance Strengthening for Impact program, or PACMOSI, were recently in the Pacific to train health professionals on monitoring mosquito resistance. So joining me this morning is Country Liaison and Coordination for PACMOSI, Dr. Amanda Murphy. With that, I say good morning and welcome to the show, Doctor.
Oh, good morning, Aggie. Lovely to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Appreciate your time this morning. Now, as I said, you've been working alongside Fiji's Health Ministry and Medical Services. I'd love to know if you could take us through what has happened and why was it necessary for an outbreak to be declared?
Well, outbreaks are declared fairly regularly in Fiji because the virus is there all year round, unfortunately circulating, and every now and then a few different factors come together to cause an outbreak, and those factors are sufficient numbers of mosquitoes flying around and biting people, the weather conditions being right, and having enough susceptible people who are not immune to dengue in the area.
Doctor, is that then, would that be the reason or the cause of this outbreak?
Yeah, it's usually a combination of those factors, basically. So that this time of year, there's a lot of water around, a lot of mozzies around, and then all you need is for one infected person to come into the area and boom, off it goes.
But for our listeners, and there might be some who just don't understand what dengue fever is, or what is it exactly, and how can one actually get infected?
Sure. Dengue is a virus. It's a viral infection that's spread by the bite of infected mosquitoes, and it's usually by a specific group of mosquitoes called Aedes species of mosquitoes. And those ones, you can often see them if you look when they're landing on your hand. They've got black and white stripes on them, so they're quite kind of visually striking. And essentially, the bite of those mosquitoes transmits the virus into the blood of humans. And after sort of a week to 10 days, you'll start to get symptoms like fever. A lot of joint and muscle pain is quite characteristic of dengue, sometimes a skin rash. And in severe cases, you can be hospitalised with organ damage and even death. So that's why it's so serious and important to take precautions.
I was just going to ask that. I mean, how serious can it get? And often, is this something that is just prone to the Pacific?
No, it's a global problem, usually in tropical areas. But, you know, with areas becoming warmer and warmer around the world, it is spreading. It's on every continent of the globe, pretty much, except maybe Antarctica has these mosquitoes now and are vulnerable. And there are outbreaks all over the world all the time. And unfortunately, they're happening more often.
Mm. Well, you know, your team was in Fiji recently to provide training to health professionals on monitoring mosquito resistance to insecticides. Could you explain what was involved in that process?
Oh, yeah, sure. As you may know, or the listeners may know, using insecticides is one of the main control methods for killing mosquitoes and protecting people from mosquito bites and viruses that come from mosquitoes. But unfortunately, a little bit like what happens with antibiotics is there can be resistance that's developed by the mosquitoes to the insecticide. And so when you use them for many, many years, as is the case in Fiji and other countries, unfortunately, sometimes the mosquitoes can become resistant and they don't die anymore, essentially, which is a really, really big problem globally. So we were in Fiji to train the Ministry of Health and actually a bunch of other health department staff from other Pacific islands on how to test their mosquitoes, essentially, to see if they're still susceptible to insecticides or whether they're resistant, meaning that the chemicals won't work anymore.
So in replace of that, what is it that you guys ended up having to use to somehow, stop the spread of the mosquitoes and the dengue fever?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's a problem. There's not a lot of other alternatives. There are new types of insecticide chemicals being developed. They are a little bit more expensive and not as user-friendly, but essentially that's the only other option at this stage is to get a different type of chemicals. The problem with that is then the mosquitoes might become resistant to those over time. So what we recommend is to switch the type of insecticide that is used regularly so the mosquitoes don't get too used to one type.
Thank you for that. If you're just tuning in, I am speaking to Country Liaison and Coordination for PACMOSI, Dr. Amanda Murphy, about the outbreak there of dengue fever in Fiji specifically, though. Now, I remember that the reports had said that Western Division of Fiji has experienced the most cases of dengue. Again, mm-hmm. Is there any particular reason as to why they've experienced the most? I mean, is it to do with the environment, the weather, hygiene?
Yes, it can be all of those things. A lot of the time also it's about how much water is built up in containers or water holes or pools, in the previous weeks. So it may be that in that particular area of Fiji, for some reason, there's a lot of water holding containers at this time of year. And it's really difficult to get rid of all the places where, you know, mosquitoes might lay their eggs in water. It can be very small amounts of water, even the bottom of your pot plant, the base of the pot plant, flower vases, the little bit of water that collects in tyres is a really big problem. If there's large pieces of rubbish outside the house, like particularly white goods or old pieces of cars, all these kind of things that can trap water, mosquitoes can breed there. So it can be quite difficult to remove all of those places. I don't know if that's the you know, the reason in this particular case, but often that is one of the main contributing factors.
Doctor, we were looking at some of the stats even from last year, because Samoa had also declared an outbreak of dengue in August last year. So wondering, is Fiji facing that same type of outbreak? Is it very similar?
Well, it's already at least 200 cases reported. So that is, you know, fairly serious. And if the ministry obviously will be working hard right now to get on top of that and make sure it doesn't become any bigger. And the one in Samoa did go on for several months and did have, you know, I think it was up to more than 500 cases last year. And that was really, it really puts a drain on the resources of the health department to be running around trying to kill these mosquitoes all over the country. I guess the difference at the moment in Fiji is that it's, I think it's quite contained to one area of Fiji. In Samoa, it was everywhere. It was all across the island. So Fiji might have a bit of an advantage at the moment if they can get on top of it in this area and contain it. It may not spread you know, to other places.
Well, earlier I mentioned that the MOH or the Ministry of Health have urged the public to be vigilant, take precautions, right? So what does the community need to do to actually stay safe then?
Yeah, so, I mean, prevention is better. We're in that area of Fiji now. We're beyond prevention, unfortunately, and the only thing that can be done is to protect yourself from mosquito bites. Before the outbreak, obviously trying to remove all of those containers which hold water is the best. But once the outbreak has started, it's sort of a little bit too late for that. And it's now time just to protect people from getting bitten, because you have a lot of adult mosquitoes flying around that are infected with the dengue virus. And they can live for several weeks and bite many, many people in those weeks. So the main, although it's still good to, you know, clean up your yard and make sure there's no breeding sites, in an outbreak, the priority is to kill adult mosquitoes that have the virus in them and protect people from being bitten. So wearing long sleeve clothing, window screens if you can in your house, that kind of thing, repellent. Those are, you know, they're not fun and exciting tools, but those are the tools we have, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, look, thank you for the work that you do, Doctor. And we always say prevention is better than the cure, right? So we appreciate the work you're doing in the Pacific for our communities, but we thank you again for your time on the show this morning.
Thank you so much, Aggie. Thanks for having me.
No worries. That, of course, is Country Liaison and Coordination for PECMOSSI, Dr. Amanda Murphy. Coming up shortly, we've got your news wrap right here on Pacific Beat.
Nijam 40, hosted by me, Sam Wicks,
and me, Tenero Aruna. Each week, we'll bring you Pacific Islander stories from on and off the rugby league and rugby union field.
We'll have plenty of special guests, tales from the past, tackle the big topics of today, and look forward to the next-gen Nijam Footy Stars.
Nijam Footy. Nijam Footy.
Monday afternoons at 4 o'clock PNG time
on ABC Radio Australia.
It is Pacific Beat, and it's that time where we head around the region to get the latest headlines. It's your news wrap with producer Finau Fonua. Welcome back. How was your weekend?
It was good.
Good?
Good.
Relaxing?
No, yeah, not much.
No, not much happened except the Miss Pacific pageant, which we've already had that conversation. But this incident here, though, very, very unfortunate to hear. We start off with a Samoan woman and New Zealand resident. She died in Apia after being shot. What happened there?
This happened on Friday. According to the Samoan Observer, the 18-year-old woman who is a New Zealand resident, she was in Samoa for a visit. And Samoan police said the shooting arose from a relationship argument. She was shot in the head. Her shooter, a 32-year-old man, drove home after committing the shooting, and he committed suicide after.
So, so sad.
We'll have more details on it.
Yeah, definitely. We head to the Solomon Islands, though. A school cyber awareness program that has been delivered to over 10,000 students. Give us more details, Finau.
Yes. According to the Solomon times, the program is being facilitated by the Royal Solomon Islands Police Force and the Ministry of Communication. This online awareness program has been taken to 21 schools in Honiara, and it's delivered to other groups as well. Presentations by the stakeholders, it's about risk and responsibilities you have to take while navigating online. The organizer, Kevin Shaw, said it's critical to protecting children and youth from online risks, cyberbullying, which is, as you know from our previous stories, has become a problem in the Pacific. And yeah, that's the aim of this program.
Wow. Love that. Okay. Well, Fijian Indian Defence Ministers, they meet in Bengaluru in India. How did that meeting unfold?
Minister for Defence, Pio Tikonduadua, he's in Bengaluru. And he met with India's Defence Minister, Rajnath Singh. The meeting took place on the sidelines of Aero India 2025. That's a defense forum. And both of them discussed a means to further deepen defense cooperation. Also, according to Fiji Sun, Tikandundua also met with, the defense minister of South Sudan. Fiji has a peacekeeping force there. But in his meeting with the Indian defense minister, they agreed to institutionalize an India-Fiji joint working group on defense cooperation. And Tikonduadua said on his X that Fiji and India share a long history of collaboration, and he hoped to hope they would further their relationship.
All right. Definitely a lot of furthering of relationships across the moana here. But Finau, as always, grateful to have you on the show for our news wrap. That is producer Finau Fonua on your news wrap here on Pacific Beat.
Pacific Beat.
In about 2 hours' time, America's biggest sporting event, the Super Bowl, will kick off in New Orleans, Louisiana, where the reigning champions, the Kansas Chiefs, take on the Philadelphia Eagles. While Polynesian names will dot the rosters on both sides, such as Chiefs players Kingsley Suamataya, Juju Schuster, Marlon Tuipulotu and Siaki Ika, all of whom have Tongan and Samoan heritage. On the Eagles, there is Lakin Vakalahi, Cameron Latu and Jordan Mailata. Eagles players Mailata and Vakalahi are both Australians discovered by NFL scouts. One person who helped Vakalahi get signed by the Philadelphia Eagles last year is Melbourne-based trainer and owner of the Conquest gym, Dave Duinauvai. He joins us on the line to talk us through about his work and the growing presence of Pacific players in the NFL. There I say, whewhihake, Dave, and welcome to the show.
Hey, maloha mau. Thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
No, I appreciate your time. Firstly, goodness, can you describe what it means for you to see the Philadelphia Eagles in the Super Bowl, especially knowing that Lakin Vakalahi is on their practice squad?
Yes, ma'am. No, it's a blessing. It's exciting. It's very rewarding. You know, I think the important part of Lakin's journey, you know, he took a leap of faith, and you know, he didn't know the game. He didn't, understand the training and the commitment it took, for him to get that opportunity. But, you know, blessed to now be in his corner, and he's now in the Super Bowl as part of the squad. So, yeah, it's a rewarding feeling and exciting to see it all happen.
Yeah, I mean, look, getting into the NFL is an extremely competitive, right, and lengthy process. I know in the US, usually the standard pathway is a bit of a vigorous 4 or 3 years in college football, but, you know, for Lakin, like Jordan Mailata, they were recruited as international players through this alternative route. I mean, describe that process that Lakin undertook, and how did you actually help him?
Yes, ma'am. It was Lakin's recruitment was pretty rare. It was either 6 degrees of separation, or as you know, as we say, it's God's blessing. His parents were in Hawaii. They were watching a University of Hawaii game, and they spoke to one of Coach Chris Nally's friends. And Coach Chris Nally, he's the international scout for the Philadelphia Eagles. He's been, a pioneer with what we do here, and I met him back in 2015, and blessed to continue our relationship. He's been instrumental, and Chris's friend in Hawaii reached out to Coach Chris, who was actually with me. We're finishing up a combine and showed him photos of Frank showed him photos of his sons. And so from Melbourne, Chris left to New Zealand and went and found Lakin, who was on his mission in Wellington. So Chris did a workout with him, you know, rang me on the spot and said, hey, Coach, I got someone, you know, I'm going to send him down to you and let's see what he's got. So, yeah, it was definitely, you know, right timing, being at the right place. And who would have known, right? His parents were at a game watching football, to fast forward then coming down to Melbourne and getting him up to speed to now being in the NFL.
Wow. And look, this is the thing. When I look at those players, someone like Lakin, who's, I think, 6'5", Malata, he's like 6'8". You know, they all sort of weigh above 140 kilos. You know, big, bulky Pacific Islander kids. I mean, is this what the NFL scouts are looking for when they come to Australia or even New Zealand?
Yeah, I mean, they do want, you know, the size, and we're definitely suited for the game. You know, as we know, our boys and our kids are built big, and it's just getting them, I guess, to understand, you know, their talents and their physical abilities to go to that next level. But, you know, the most important part around it is they've got to train hard, you know, they've got to show their commitment. You know, making the NFL is very rare. You know, you've got 0.01% for someone who's never played the game to actually make the NFL. So, yeah, I'm blessed now that we've got teams reaching out, you know, across all different teams from the league, and they're all asking the same questions, you know, but they've got to do the work and ensure that, you know, the most important part for me, they're a good person rather than a better athlete.
Yeah, let's get into that, because, you know, with American football, it's made a huge difference, right, for so many Pacific Islanders in the United States. If we are to go back, we see the countless success stories from when Vai Sikahema was in the game to Troy Polamalu. Even for those, you know, who don't even make it into the NFL, obviously there's college football scholarships that have been given the opportunity to get that high-level education. Could you maybe expand on that?
Yes. The best part about the US system is, you know, you're a student athlete, meaning you've got to focus on, you know, your grades. You've got to make sure that you're in class, and then football comes second. You know, my goal with starting Conquest has always been to build better men and better athletes. I'm big on driving life outside the sport and the opportunities, you know, for these boys to get over there and get a degree, most important part, so then they can come back and help our families. You know, two of my athletes, I've been blessed, Ben Key and Luke Felix Fualalo, they've now got 2 degrees from, you know, going down this pathway, and they're now, you know, on the way to changing their world completely. So Luke Felix Fualalo now, he's my next one. He's in the draft coming up. So, you know, not only has he got a degree, he's now been able to go to that, you know, next level in the NFL. So, yeah, it's a real blessing to see them change their lives.
And we will definitely keep an eye on that young man too. You know, if we talk about what makes a great NFL player, especially when some of our players, you know, they do the switch from either they've been a rugby player, like let's say Jared Hayne, right? He was a rugby league superstar, probably lasted maybe a year with the 49ers. And even Mailata, who I, you know, the NRL prospect that he was, but then was unable to land a spot, yet now he's considered one of the best linemen in NFL. Your thoughts?
To be honest, it comes down to the individual, you know, and how hard they're willing to work. Football is a very detailed game. You know, there's a lot to learn. There's a lot of different movements that, you know, as rugby players that they're not used to. So, yeah, credit to Jordan and what he's done. Obviously, now has opened the door for Lakin to do the same thing. But it's just getting them to understand how to use their body for the game of the NFL. So, yeah, it's exciting times for everyone, you know, especially for our kids back on the island. And, you know, my goal one day is to go back to Tonga, Samoa, Fiji and run some combines and, yeah, help our kids get off the island.
And that is definitely something we will be looking forward to also, Dave. But look, final question I do have to ask. Who do you predict will win the Super Bowl? Are you going for the Chiefs or the Eagles?
Let's go Birds by 22.
Wow, okay. That's a confident answer right there. Dave, you gathering with family today to watch the game?
Yes, we are. We're training early this morning, so we've been here since 5:30 this morning, and then I'll let the boys have the afternoon off, so we'll be watching it all together and seeing, hopefully the Eagles get through.
Yeah, look, Dave, it is great to talk to you and love the work that you are doing for our Pacific children. Yeah, I'm sure we're going to see more coming out from the ones that you are looking after. So again, malo apito for your time on the show this morning.
I appreciate it. My lobby, though.
No worries. That is Melbourne-based trainer and owner of the Conquest Gym, Dave Duinalvai, here on Pacific Beat.
Join Jacob McQuire and Michael Chow for Nisha Daily every weekday morning on ABC Radio Australia.
Oh my God, I'm eating polystyrene. You know, sometimes I'll be munching on my polystyrene cup.
Wow.
I've just been poisoning myself all my life.
When I think about you and sort of the way you are, Michael Chow, it's like the final piece of the puzzle.
Yeah. I'm not human anymore, Aggie. I'm mostly polystyrene.
Nisha Daily, weekday mornings from 7 o'clock PNG time on ABC Radio Australia.
Well, that brings us to the end of Pacific Beat. Time to take a look back at one of our main stories. Vanuatu businesses are struggling to recover from December's earthquake. Vanuatu Chamber of Commerce consultant Peter Judge says businesses are in need of help.
There were nearly 900 jobs lost in total. That's really significant for Vanuatu, where, you know, the total size of the formal private sector is probably only somewhere in around the region of 30,000 jobs.
Find those top stories on our website where you type Pacific Beat and Radio Australia in your search engine. We are on Facebook and Instagram via our ABC Pacific page. But you can tune in same time, same place tomorrow at 6 a.m. PNG time. Remember, this afternoon we're back at 5 p.m. PNG time too. But up next it is your news, and coming up after that it's Nisha Daily. Till next time, o tua o whātou, this is Pacific Beat.